John chapter 5 is where we will be this morning. C.S. Lewis wrote in his book, Mere Christianity, he said, "I'm trying here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about Jesus. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. That is one thing we must not say. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come up with that patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He left not that open to us. He did not intend to." I think that I would add one more thing to that list, and that is that he was greatly deceived. For Paul writes to the Corinthians, and he says, "For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light." In light of the healing that Jesus did for a lame man that we looked at last week, Jesus picks a fight with the religious leaders of his day. Now, I know if you went to Sunday school like I did growing up, this doesn't fit the picture of the kind, gentle, flannel graph Sunday school class Jesus. You know, he was kind and loving and always did the nice and polite thing. But I really think that Jesus picks some fights. So let's read John chapter 5, beginning with the 15th verse this morning. And then I'll try to explain why I say that I think Jesus picks some fights. "The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. For this reason, the Jews were persecuting Jesus because he was doing these things on the Sabbath." Now, you have to understand, John is only picking out a few of the signs and wonders that Jesus did, and evidently he'd been doing more than just this one on the Sabbath. That's John's language. He goes on, he says, "But he answered them, 'My Father is working until now, and I myself am working.' For this reason, therefore, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because he not only was breaking the Sabbath, but also was calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. Therefore, Jesus answered and was saying to them, 'Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself, unless it is something he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son also does in like manner. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself is doing. And the Father will show him greater works than these, so that you will marvel. For just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, even so the Son also gives life to whom he wishes. For not even the Father judges anyone, but has given all judgments to the Son, so that all will honor the Son even as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and does not come into judgment, but is passed out of death into life. Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming and now is when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For just as the Father has life in himself, even so he gave to the Son also to have life in himself. And he gave authority to execute judgment, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and will come forth, those who did good deeds to a resurrection of life, those who committed evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment. Here is why I say that Jesus picked a fight. He healed a man on the Sabbath. He disappeared, and he came back to identify himself, the man, and give him instructions on sinning. Then he hangs around so as to be caught. Yeah, that's an interesting word. He hangs around to be caught. And I was supposed to do this. This is why I came up with quat, because I was going to go caught by the religious leaders. Then, rather than deal with the easier and just as relevant an issue as to what the fourth commandment means, he goes directly to why he can work on the Sabbath, and then to what else he can and will do. And the Jews understand that what he is saying and what he means. And that's what we need to see as well. And it begins with why he is able to work on the Sabbath. And John says that Jesus goes all the way back to the beginning. He goes all the way back to the book of Genesis to explain why he is able to work on the Sabbath. Now, if you know your Old Testament, you know that you've got the 7 days of creation, actually 6 days of creation, and then you have the seventh day when Genesis tells us that God rested from doing the work of creation that he had been doing. You also know that the fourth commandment says that you shall honor the Sabbath, you shall remember the Sabbath, and they had instructions from God about doing work on the Sabbath. But it came about that the Jews added to, they wanted to protect the Sabbath, and they were doing their best to protect the Sabbath in all things. And so the religious Jews of Jesus' day had come up with the understanding of what you could and couldn't do on the Sabbath. There were things like you couldn't carry something from one domain to another. In other words, you couldn't take something from your house and take it to your neighbor's house. That's why they were upset with this guy for carrying his mat that Jesus had healed, because he carried it from beside the pool to inside the temple. They also said that you couldn't lift something up above your head. You could lift it up to your shoulder height, that was okay, but if you lifted it up above your head, you were working. And so they came up with all of these things to keep you from working, because, well, one of the things that they believed was that if they could keep the Sabbath, if all of Israel could keep the Sabbath perfectly for one Sabbath, that the Messiah would come. And so they were very, very particular about what people did and didn't do on the Sabbath. And so what they said was, well, all of everything is God's, so God can carry anything anywhere because he's always in his domain. And then they decided that God was big enough that he never lifted anything above his shoulders anyway, so anything God did on the Sabbath day was okay. You see, they didn't want to break the Sabbath, and they wanted to explain why God could work on the Sabbath, and, well, they weren't allowed to. But here's the thing. they understood kind of what Paul will say when he says that if Jesus holds all things together, that if God holds all things together, that the minute God stops working completely, there's nothing left. Everything just dissolves if God quits holding everything together. So they admitted that God must do some work on the Sabbath day. And Jesus then comes in and he picks a fight. Because he says, you know, I can do whatever I see my Father doing. My Father works on the Sabbath, so I can work on the Sabbath. And the Jews didn't like that because Jesus was making a claim to be the Son of God. Not a Son of God. Not part of Israel, the Son of God. Not one of the representatives of Israel, the Son of God, like the kings. No, Jesus was saying, and they understood him very plainly, that he was deity. That he was God. By saying that he was the Son of God, he was saying that he was God. And therefore, if God the Father was allowed to work on the Sabbath day without it causing problems for the Jewish religious leaders, Jesus was saying, since I am God and God is my Father and my Father is working, therefore it is permissible for me to work. And the Jewish leaders, they didn't accept what Jesus was saying. And so John says they picked up some stones and they were getting ready to stone him because, well, they believed that what Jesus was saying was blasphemous. They believed that he was saying, well, actually, John tells us he was saying, they simply understood that he was claiming to be God. And as C.S. Lewis put it, there are only, well, he said three, but I'm going to say four things that are possible. One, he could be a lunatic. One, he could be a liar. Third, he could have been deceived. Or fourth, he could be God. And for the first three, the Jews didn't really care which one it was. He was blaspheming God, and they were going to do what the law said to do with somebody who blasphemed. They were going to put him to death by stoning. But John says that it wasn't good enough for Jesus to leave the argument there. Have you ever been with somebody who you know they've already won the argument, but they keep it going anyway? You know, it's bad enough if you think you're losing the argument and you continue to try to win the argument. But when it's the person who is winning, who keeps the argument going, they either have something that you really need to understand, they're God, or they're really arrogant. Well, Jesus goes on with the argument. He's really already won. But he goes on and he says, not only am I the Son of God, not only am I God and therefore can do works on the Sabbath, but let me explain to you what else I can do. Let me tell you what else I can do. And the first of those is he can give life. Now again, the Jews had this great understanding that the only one who could give life was God. God and God alone had the power to give life. You see it all the way back in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, where it says that God created man out of the dust of the earth, and then he breathed into them the breath of life. And we understand, and the Jews understood that to mean that God was the only one who could give life. You know, science has told us for years that life comes from life. The only way you can get life is to have life to give life. Life doesn't just arise out of nothing. And the Jews understood God in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, to being the one who had the power to give life. If you read through the rest of the Old Testament, you read through the Jewish scriptures, you find other places where the same concept is understood, and probably none more so than Ezekiel chapter 3, verses 1 through 11. But I just want to point out verse 5. It says, this is Ezekiel prophesying on behalf of God. It says, "Thus says the Lord God to these bones," a valley of dead bones, and Ezekiel is talking to them. Now, either Ezekiel heard from God or Ezekiel is crazy, okay? But God says to these bones, "Behold, I will cause breath to enter into you, that you may come to life." And then you read on, and in verses 9 and 10, Ezekiel has prophesied that the bones should come together, and they've got sinew and they've got flesh, and now God says, prophesy to them the breath of life, and Ezekiel prophesies, and the bodies come back to life. These dead bodies, not just dead bodies like the ones that Jesus meets when he's walking by a mother with her only son on the way to the cemetery. Not dead bodies like Lazarus, who's, according to his sister, starting to stink. But dead bodies that have been dead and out and exposed long enough that all you have left is bones. Come back to life. Because God tells Ezekiel to prophesy, and God provides breath to them. Even today, we know that you have to have life to give life. And it's been that way since the beginning. And now Jesus comes in and he says to them, he says, "I can give you life." And immediately when Jesus says to the religious leaders, "Hey, I can give life to whomever I want," their blood begins to boil a little faster, and their faces get a little more red. And you can see a little bit more steam rolling out. Oh, wait, no, that'd just be in a cartoon. Sorry. The steam rolling out of their ears. But Jesus says to them, "I have the power of life." He'll state it in a different way in John chapter 10, verse 10, when he says, "The thief comes to steal and destroy, but I come to give life and give it to the full." Or in John chapter 6 or 3, verse 16, when it says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life." You see, Jesus says to the people, "I have the ability to give you life now in a way that you have never experienced it before. I can give you real life." But he also says, "I can give you life that will go on into eternity." Talking about spiritual life, but then he also talks about the physical resurrection at the end of what we read this morning in verses 28 and 29. It says that Jesus says that the dead will hear what? My voice. Jesus says, "My voice." The dead will hear my voice, and when they hear my voice, then they will come back to life. So Jesus has the power to give resurrection at the end of time. So whether you're looking at spiritual or physical, Jesus has the power of life both in the present and in the future. He's picking a fight. He's making sure that the Jews cannot deny what he is saying. And again, I say, you know, somebody who keeps the fight going even when you've won, you've got three choices, and I think Jesus is God, and that's what he's trying to point out. And so he keeps the argument going. Not only is he the Son of God who has the right to give life, but he is also the dispenser of judgment. He is the one who is going to mete out judgment. And again, you go back to the Old Testament, you go to the understanding of the Jews, and the understanding was that only God had the right to judge men. Only God had the right to look at you and to tell you completely and fully whether you were guilty or innocent. Only God had the right to determine your eternal destiny. And Jesus says, I have that right. But you look back through history and you find the fact that God is the one who dispenses judgment. Again, you go all the way back to the creation story, Genesis chapter 3. And there in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve have sinned, and God sends justice by telling Adam and Eve that they will, while evil, have difficult childbirth and have relational problems, and Adam that he's going to have to now work extra hard and things aren't going to be the way they used to be. He puts the creation under a curse. You know, the reason that we don't experience life the way that we were supposed to. And then he gives a curse to the serpent. And God is the one who has the right to mete out judgment. You go a few chapters later and you get to chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11. And again, we see God passing judgment. Because there it says that the stench of the sins of men had risen up to God, and God couldn't stand it anymore, and so he sent a flood and wiped out everyone, except for Noah and his wife, his three sons and their wives, eight persons, and two of every kind of animal, and seven pairs of clean animals. So God had the right to judge. And then I had to include this, the song of Moses. Moses is getting ready to die, but he teaches the Israelites this song, and in the midst of it, speaking about God, speaking about justice, and speaking about the other nations, in verses 4 and 5 of chapter 32, he says, "The rod, his work is perfect, for all his ways are just," underline that word, just, "a God of faithfulness without injustice, righteous and upright is he. They have acted corruptly toward him. They are not his children because of their defect, but are a perverse and crooked generation." And then you go down to verse 35 of the same chapter, and it says, "Vengeance is mine and retribution in due time. Their foot will slip, for the day of their calamity is near, and their impending things are hastening upon them." And so Moses teaches the Israelites that God will carry out justice in its proper time and in its complete ways upon all the nations, upon all the nations, upon all the peoples. You see, he is the creator. God is the creator, and he knows how things are supposed to work. And everything belongs to him, and everything is his. And so he has instructed us to act accordingly, to treat things well and to use them as they were intended to be used. And he has the right. The Israelites understood that God had the right to punish those who refuse to obey. And in fact, at one point in time, God told the people of Israel, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that they were not going to inherit the land at that moment because the sins of the people who lived in the land hadn't reached a high enough level. And God was waiting for the right time to mete out judgment because, not because the people, there weren't some good people, not because they didn't do good things, but because God put within us all the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong, and they continued to choose to do what was wrong, to use God's creation against the way that God had created it to be used. And so God eventually is going to carry out justice. And Jesus says that he has the right to carry out justice. In fact, he said, God has given all judgment to him. That he is the one who is going to be in some way responsible for all judgment to be carried out. And at that moment, when Jesus was speaking that, he was talking about how he would deal with people because he knew their hearts and he knew their thoughts and he knew why they said things they said and did things they said or were going to do. And he chose how he was going to act. And so part of his being willing to pick a fight with the Jewish leaders of his day was because he was going to bring justice and judgment that came through his dying on the cross. But even today, Jesus would look and he would say, I have the right to judge men based upon how they choose to respond to me. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Judgment comes through how we respond to Jesus Christ. And now he chooses whether he is going to give life or whether he is going to bring justice. He chooses how he will respond to people based upon how they respond to him. But it also goes on because he says not just now will that choice be made, but he says at the final judgment, at the final judgment, all men will stand before him. And all men will be judged based upon what they have done with the truth of Jesus Christ. Is he God or is he not? Do you believe that he is God and live the way that he calls you to live? Or do you reject him and try, like other people do, to find a way to say that Jesus was simply a good teacher? Because as C.S. Lewis says, he does not leave that option open. He either is God or he is not good at all. And the Jews understood. There's one more thing that you have to see here, and that is the fact that Jesus calls himself Son of Man. He calls himself Son of Man, and there is a spot in the book of Daniel, in Daniel chapter 7, where Daniel gets the vision of one like a Son of Man, riding on the clouds and coming to the seat of God's throne, the seat of glory. And then is explained that he is going to mete out judgment. Riding on the clouds was a way of saying this is God. This is deity coming. One who looked like a Son of Man was coming as deity on the clouds to the throne of God. And the reason he came to the throne of God was to carry out justice, to mete out judgment. And the Jews understood. The Jews understood when Jesus said, I am the Son of God. They understood when Jesus said, I am the one who has the power of life. And then he said, I am the one who has the right to judge. They understood Jesus was making a three-point argument and Jesus was picking a fight. You see, C.S. Lewis rightly says that we must choose how we will respond to Jesus. Is he a liar? Is he a lunatic? Was he deceived? Or is he Yahweh, the creator of the universe? Is he God? The Jews to whom Jesus was speaking knew what he was claiming, and that was that he was God. And yet they chose to treat him as one who was blaspheming, making light of the nature of God. And thus, they wanted to stone him. In John, or John says in 1 John chapter 2, verses 18 through 23, and Jesus says in Matthew chapter 24, verses 23 and 24, that there will be many who try to twist the nature of God, who Jesus was and what it means that Jesus is God. And unfortunately, we live in a society where that is utterly undeniable. But the question is not, who do you say Jesus is? But the question is, do you accept who Jesus said he was? God in the flesh, the one who will give life and dispense judgment. Jesus says that those who accept that he is God are honoring God in him as they honor God. And that is what we're going to do now. So, sorry, Tracy. That is what we're going to do now. We're going to honor God with our hearts, our minds, and our voices as we sing this next song. If you believe that Jesus is God, sing loud, worship well. Let's stand together.